Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Genuine Chit Chat. This week is part two of my chat from the guys from the In The Black podcast. Now if you tuned in last week, then you'll know the sort of general things we're speaking about, racial issues and that sort of thing. The podcast of part one ended with a discussion on Black Panther and that sort of continues in this one. So that's the sort of things that you can kind of expect. I will just say, last week I did stupidly upload the wrong episode. So anyone who downloaded part one of this chat last week, you may have got a version which was basically the same chat as the one from the week before, which was with Christopher Gerg of Tetra Defense. That's completely my fault. I made an error. I'm really sorry about that. I think I amended it on Thursday, I think it was, that it all got sorted and things. So any regular listeners, if you went back and listened and it sounded a bit familiar or it wasn't what you're expecting, that's the reason why. So please go back and re-download that if you haven't already listened to it. And as I say, I do apologize for this. I did put on social media, I'm just a pleb and I did that by accident. Fortunately, it's the only time I've done it so far on Genuine Chit Chat. Hopefully it'll be the only time I do it, but Big O was kind enough to let me know it had happened on Thursday and that's how I realized it. I normally check these things quite thoroughly. I checked all the audio files and everything. It was just the last final bit of the upload process I didn't check, so sorry about that. Anyway, just quickly before we get started, what you can expect from this chat in very small detail is we speak about representation, diversity and stereotyping, the influence of people in power, the differences in the UK and US's views on sort of racism and immigration, Idris Elba and Daryl Davis come up, and then towards the end we speak about, well, Big O, Phil and L all give their opinions on the future of Black America and potential reparations for slavery and other things. So that's what you can expect from this chat. There won't be a promo this week either, so it's the chat is just going to get started basically as soon as the intro music comes in and does the usual stuff. So you know, thank you so much for listening guys. I appreciate anyone's patience about the error from last week and I do apologize for that. And for any new listeners, I will be back at the end of this chat just to give a bit more information of what is to come and other such like. I have started up a new podcast as well, about Star Wars comics. That is going to be detailed not only in the description but also at the end of the show as well, so be sure to tune in for that. Anyway guys, thank you so much for tuning in. I really hope you enjoyed the chat as much as I did. It's one of my favourites that I've ever done, and I'll talk to you at the end. Welcome to Genuine Chit Chat, where we have honest conversations with interesting people, and I'm your host, Mike Burton.
I think the change for me, though, that really gravitated me towards the other side of seeing the importance of it was Black Panther. I was a fan of Black Panther in the comic long before when Reginald Hudlin was doing it. I thought it was the greatest thing ever.
Priest was dope too.
When I saw them. Yeah, Priest was okay. I like Priestess. But Christopher Priest for people who don't know
you're right.
We're speaking blurred. but when Black Panther came out, that changed my perspective. And it only changed my perspective purely from the standpoint of giving little Black kids something to see in the Afrofuturism perspective.
Yeah.
It was major for me for my daughter to be able to see Shuri, who she still follows and still thinks is the greatest thing. That right there, that representation meant a whole lot. So it began to change my perspective. But I still cringe every now and then when I see, you know, the super Negro, the Black Negro sidekick in a movie. The shit irritates me sometimes. So I still struggle with it.
I was just going to say with my perspective on with Black Panther is when people, I'm a massive nerd. I've seen, you know, all the Marvel movies and obviously Star Wars tattoos. So full on. With Black Panther, one of the things when people ask me sort of what my opinion is of it and as a film, one thing that I say to them is that my issue with Black Panther is just the very end, I find, is not like the final bout when there's the CGI fighting. That lets the film down to a degree. But I find that the social commentary is so far beyond anything Marvel has released. By, I know that it's not solely from that film. I know that sort of Wakanda and things is from the comics, but I feel like one of the things that I found that film I liked so much about it was that the standard, it flipped it on its head. Obviously, that's the point. Africa, Africa in general is seen as one of the sort of poorest continents, essentially. Sure. And obviously the individual sort of countries within that same sort of opinion. Yeah. With Black Panther, what it did is it said, no, we've got technology beyond white people. We've got wealth beyond. We've got happiness beyond. We've got all these things and we don't need you. And in the film, it's showing if you, you know, the whole brilliance of the villain, Michael B. Jordan, is his character is, apart from probably Thanos, I'd say is the best villain in Marvel because he is, I was rooting for him. I was like, you are, yeah. You are actually correct. You are like,
yes.
And it's
Mike,
like,
they're going to take away your white person card. You're going to watch yourself. Good grief.
So, and, you know what I mean? And it's like, that's the problem is that the best thing about that film is that the social commentary is so powerful, but it's upsetting that it took them till, I think that's phase three.
Yeah, before they finally put it in.
And it's yeah. always, in my opinion, when it comes to representation, and obviously I'm nowhere near as informed on this sort of matter as any of you guys.
We won't hold that against you. Right, we didn't invite you to the cookout, though.
Oh, oh yeah, I definitely want that.
No.
So what I feel about it is, I find that with a lot of the representation, in accordance with everything you guys have said, it seems to be a lot of the time, it gets, you know, Black Panther gets released, and it's like, oh, amazing, fantastic. Skin, like sort of skin level, skin deep, that's perfect, amazing. You know, everyone's happy, in air quotes. But then you look further into it, and then you start seeing the cracks, in a sense. You go, well, why is it taking them this long to release this? Why is it only in phase three and not one of the earlier phases if it's this important? Mm. Why is it that this is, apart from, I think, Blade, to my knowledge,
yes.
one of the only major superheroes that are black on the big screen? Yeah. And also what I find is, what happens quite a lot is, you have a black character, superhero, ever, and their identity is solely the fact that they're black. And there's some of the time, I don't think this is the case with Black Panther, and I don't think this is the case with Blade either, but there are certain characters or certain representations that seem to be like, hey, look, we've got a black person, they're in the forefront. By the way, we are going to consistently, and all of their entire personality is solely going to be on the basis of black. Yeah. I don't know.
See, that's the caveat with this diversity push. It makes everyone, it seems like everyone's in a marathon to be the first. Everyone's to be the pioneer, because they're obviously benefits to being the pioneer, right?
Right.
Not really. not really. That's a lie. But that's the biggest caveat to all this push for diversity, is that everyone's racing to the finish because they'll get the most money, they'll get the most respect, they'll be seen as the least racist. So if you're seen as the least racist, the more diverse people come to your show. And I mean, granted, I guess a bottom line can't be escaped here, you know, but there has to be some level of sincerity, but it does start to break apart when, you know, we only see these instances rather infrequently or only in certain very specific strains. You know what I mean? I mean, granted, Marvel is starting to open the floodgates quite a bit. With the Pakistani American female coming, a Latina gay woman is coming soon, things of that nature. But at the same time, it shouldn't feel like a marathon, like a sprint to the finish, that we have to be first, that we have to be the one to show you how to do it. You know,
I think it's because we battle with these stereotypes, and just to bring it down just a bit, mm-hmm. I think here in the United States, and you guys correct me if I'm wrong, that there is this off thought or back thought that people with English accents are like, they have to be cultured, they have to be smart. And I bet you the reverse is the same, or the reverse is the case in the UK. When you hear an American accent, you're like, okay, yeah, this is one of those type of folks or whatever, right? I want to make sure that I'm clear. Men with English accents are gross. Women with English accents, Jesus Christ. Women with English accents makes my teeth sweat. Oh my God, I love every single bit. Now that we're going to edit that part out, my wife is going to listen to this.
I ain't saying shit. I don't know what
But I was just battling through those stereotypes that we have to be able to say, okay, well, you know, it's not just about that, as much as my blackness or my Asianness or whatever you want to call it is prominent or I guess is a benefit to me, it's not solely who I am. And we want you to be able, if you're going to tell the story of us or allow us to be in the story, tell our full story. Don't hamper it or whitewash it or milk it down just because it makes you feel a little bit uncomfortable.
Yeah, it is one of those things, and it happens, obviously, this conversation is more centered around blackness, but it happens a lot, I find, with any minority. Anyone who isn't a straight white male, for so long, it's always that way, because it was like when you get, say, a homosexual individual, say, a gay man on screen, for so long, it wasn't just, hey, this person just happens to be gay, but they're a person. Is they are camp, they are flailing their wrists about, they couldn't be more obviously gay, and that's right. It. That's the only representation. Yeah. And that sort of thing seems to happen quite a lot, just across the board of these things.
Let me ask you, why do you think that that is then, Mike?
Yeah, go ahead.
Why do you think that is?
I think the reason is because it's disingenuous. I think it's because people don't actually want, a lot of the sort of the people at the top, they don't want to actually show representation because, in brutal honesty, they don't give a shit. They don't at all. Because, you know, what they really want to do is, as you guys have said, fill their pockets. Well, with Black Panther, due to the sort of cultural impact of it and the importance, it obviously made, I think, like over $1 billion. So now, you know, Disney slash Marvel are going like, they were like, oh, let's let them have this one, see how it goes, let's just be careful with it, you know, we're not sure how this is going to go, not doing it for the right reasons. And then when it made loads of money, they're like, oh, we've got a whole market here, yes, let's do loads of these. And it's one of those things where you can never really know what the intent is, but I think you have, one has to try to unfortunately take what you can get in some way, not be a, I don't mean in any way be content with it in any way, shape or form. I'm not saying that's okay, but sometimes it's like, yeah, this has got this in it, but for just this moment, let's just be happy we've got this.
Oh, yeah.
And then tomorrow we'll then go, okay, here's all the problems.
And that's exactly what we did. Kind of, yep, this is some bullshit, exactly. But let's go enjoy it.
Yeah. This is some bullshit.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. But we're going to have a good time.
Life in America.
Yeah, that's a little blackness America. Yeah. Oh, this is some bullshit. Let's do it.
One thing I was thinking, this is just a random thought, and I hope it doesn't offend any of you guys, but I just wrote it down because it came out of nowhere, and I think it's, especially in America, the only thing that white people are more scared of than black people is being called racist. And, do you know what I mean? I just thought of that, and I was just like, I'm not saying it's necessarily true, but it just seems to be that way in my say. Well, either they're racist or they're terrified to some degree of being called racist to such a huge degree, they kind of become racist by
time. No, you know what? I have to disagree, because every damn Halloween, a bunch of white folks act like they don't care if they lose their jobs, their homes, their families, because of blackface.
Yeah, right.
So I'm like, I'm not sure if...
But not only that, with the elevation of Trump to office really has emboldened, and I hate that. I don't think he birthed a bunch of races. I don't think, you know, he created a bunch of races. I think he gave a bunch of white races some get up and go.
He enabled them.
Type of shit, some energy. He definitely enabled them. So I don't think white people care about being called racist anymore, Mike. I think maybe before it might have been an issue. I don't think they care about it at all. I don't know what they're scared of. I don't know what white people in America are afraid of. I don't think they're afraid of us. I think a lot of black people feel like that white people are scared of us. I don't think they have a fucking reason to be scared of us just because they sit in a position of power. I don't know what they're afraid of, man. And I don't think that they really, and when I say white people, just to be clear, and this, Mike, this is something I very rarely say. I very rarely.
He's lying. He says it all the time.
I never say I'm not
says
a racist.
It all the damn time.
Oh, I don't like white people. I never make those type of caveats, those type of disclaimers. But since I'm speaking to a different audience, I want to be clear. When I speak about white people and whiteness, I'm speaking very general, because this has been the universal feeling of most of us in Black America, that we don't know what you guys are afraid of here in the States. I don't think that they really give a fuck about other people. And honestly, I don't know why black people here in America feel like white people should give a fuck.
It's one of those things where obviously in England, we'll get into this sort of, because it was on one of the notes anyway. In England, the type of racism seems to be slightly different from that of America in some way. The number one sort of attacked group of people is different.
Now it's brown people and Muslims, is that right? Mm-hmm.
Exactly, yep. Yeah. So in America, it was generally, it seems to be, you know, at the fourth, kind of like, which is the most serious, it seems, but not talked about as much, is black people. And then immigrants, primarily Mexican immigrants, mm-hmm. not Canadian immigrants, because obviously they're white, but, you know, different, that's the problem. Mm-hmm. In England, what it seems to be is, from my experience, I'm sure there has been racism in England in recent times, definitely. But from my experience, it's not about white or black. It is more so, as you said, it's more so about people being Muslim, people being, you know, immigrants, that sort of aspect of it. And there's so many, because it's fear. The problem is that what people have is that they think everything in my immediate circle is perfect. And around me, there is no one who is different to me. And therefore, anything bad that happens is only because of these different people coming in. Even though the irony in both America and England having such issues with racism and immigration being that those are the two countries which have benefited arguably the most from those exact things. Is that England is literally, we've been invaded constantly over the thousands of years and taken over.
You're right, Mike.
And then we're the ones that go out.
You see, Mike is one of the good ones. Mike is one of the good ones. We appreciate you.
All right, we're still vetting them out.
Okay, my bad.
I want the real history now.
It's just... right. So it's just one of those things where, you know, we had so many people come in and invade and take over and all that sort of jazz. And then we go around the world and we do this to all these other countries. And then when they go, we're saying like, oh, we want to go over and colonize everyone because we're so great. And then when people go, hey, can we come over then? It sounds really cool. Can we? No. But you're going out telling us that you're better than everyone, trying to take over places that don't want to be taken over, and then you're now not letting people in because you're worried they're going to cause problems. Do you not see? And that's kind of what's like in America as well, in a lot of ways.
That's America.
To be blunt, like, let's be honest and blunt here. The reason that the majority of black people are in America is due to slavery.
It wasn't their choice to be over there.
So your ancestors get dragged over to a place they don't want to go to. They start, you know, over years, well, hundreds of years and years and years of oppression and racism and horrendous atrocities. They are getting nearer the point of being seen as sort of full class citizens as well. Obviously, it should, on paper, it should be that way, but you guys still aren't treated as much, which is the problem. Yeah. And yet, you guys never wanted to be there, but then you're there trying to make it work, trying to, you know, live your lives and trying to make, you know, make money, the capitalist American dream, yet you're still somehow, you can't win. Yeah. And it's the same over here with immigrants. Mm. If an immigrant comes over here and works hard, they're stealing our jobs. But if they come over here and they don't work hard,
you're living off the dole, yeah.
And if they don't come over here at all, then we're like, we don't want to be
But you know what's funny is that it's such a different distinction
like that. I mean,
you know what's funny? Because I've been reading articles we've been reading a bunch, especially in preparation for the show, and seeing that the UK seems to have an age disparity issue, like with the United States too. There are so many people that are in that baby boomer retirement age, and I mean, I don't know about Mike. He's a millennial, so hopefully he's getting the good stuff on the side once he gets off the recording. But a lot of you UK folks apparently aren't having sex, so there's nobody creating the next generation of workers to fill in the spot, right? So I think that that's like amazing. So it's like, okay, you have all these old folks. They're going into retirement. They're going to be dead maybe within the next 15 to 20 years. But at the same time, you don't want immigrants to come over. And in the third place, you're not doing what you need to do to replenish the population so that you don't have to rely on immigrants coming over to be part of your workforce. Like, it really kind of blows my mind. And you see that here in the United States as well. It's like, okay, well, we don't want to give you the proper due to allow you to advance in society. But then at the same time, we have all these baby boomers and there's no one coming behind them to fill in these spots and do what they need to do. And ultimately, at the end of the day, you're still told, and probably the same thing happens in the UK, that you're part of the tapestry that makes up the country. Anytime they want to talk about nationalism, and I don't mean that in a negative way, talking about cultural nationalism, they incorporate everyone, whether you're Muslim, whether you're Indian, whether you're Jamaican, whether you're Nigerian, regardless of what it is. And then when it comes time to vote and decide on policies, then it's like, okay, well, yeah, now we got to take a step back and look at really who's really British or who's really American in those conversations. I was watching something not too long ago. I don't know if they still show it on British TV. I saw this a while back, but it's called The Event. Okay. And they happen to have one of my favorite white people on the show, Jane Elliott, who is the creator of the blue-eyed, green-eyed test. Basically a test that she put after the death or the assassination of Martin Luther King to describe to her all-white class why there are differences or why the society sees that there's differences and discrimination between black people and white people. But she just used blue eyes and green eyes to do that. So she brought that same premise to the UK, and she did a TV show called The Event. And the premise or the title of that particular episode was called How Racist Are You? And it went through the processes of allowing black people, Indian people, Jamaicans, whatever the case is, to talk about their fears and understanding and experiences about racism.
Yeah.
And it was mind-blowing to me as someone who's an American looking at from the outside in, that there are a lot of racist white people everywhere. Like, you should have the number of people that stood up and combated these experiences, these lived experiences as less than, blew my mind. And I always had the opinion that, you know, like I said, you got you British people with your English accents, you got to be cultured. You guys got to be better than us over here. Like, I thought you guys knew better. I
mean, there is a general perception of that there is no perception of racial disparity in your country.
It's in. The problem is with England is obviously this discussion is kind of obviously a lot of generalizations. You know, you guys know that not every white person in America wants to oppress black people. And over here in England, not every white person hates immigrants and things. But the issue is that unfortunately there is, I believe, a minority, but an enough of a minority of racists who are all, let me try and put it this way. There are people who are, there's people who are racist who are actively against minorities. There are people who are basically, in a sense, kind of neutral. They're not against them, but they're not actually really going to do anything for them. They're just going to leave it. And then there's the people who are willing to stand up and fight for the right things. Yeah. The problem is, I think, is that there's a high amount of people in the middle. Then there's a small amount of people who are sort of for minorities and a small amount of people who are against minorities. But the problem is the people who are against it are so much louder and so much more active than they are the people in the middle or the people who are actually wanting the betterment for people. So what ends up happening is that when you have things like, I think you guys want me to bring up Brexit to some degree. Brexit, you know, we joined the European Union several decades ago, I think the 60s or something along those lines, and everything's been fine, seemingly, and any issues caused is not because of Brexit. And then one of the politicians, basically in their party, they're all fighting about trying to leave the EU. And then that person was Prime Minister, David Cameron. And he was like, you know what? Fine. Let's have a vote on it. Let's let the public vote. And then spread of misinformation on both sides, to be fair. And then eventually Brexit happened and it was an incredibly slim majority of wanting to leave. And then for years and years, everyone was kind of still fighting again and that sort of thing. And now we are officially leaving. Now, the issue is that people seem to bring up things that have never been brought up before, which seem to have never bothered them before, but now suddenly it's this huge issue. So it's, they've never had an issue with being in the EU. We've never really had an issue with immigrants. And in fact, the statistics that I've looked at have shown that immigrants actually cause a net profit to our economy, because the majority of people who are working in the NHS, which is our National Health Service, majority of the nurses and doctors are people from other countries and things. So they're people who generally also are not white. One of the sort of standard in England is you often get an Indian doctor. You know, no one complains about that. That's not a problem. No one should really give a shit. But it seems to be, all of a sudden, once Brexit was in everyone's minds, all these people who were seemingly never had a political opinion before are so angry about an issue which is not caused by immigrants, but blame immigrants and will force everything on them. And it's this weird, it's not quite cognitive dissonance, but it's just like you sat around being fine and then someone kind of runs in your house and says, quick, the immigrants, they're going to destroy everything. And you go, okay, quick, let's get them. And then not think about anything, not look at any research, not even think as a human being, okay, surely if there are people coming over to our country, there is a reason for that. Why is that? Well, we have a national healthcare service. We have a lot of job opportunities. We have, you know, quite liberal government generally, you know, for, you know, gay marriage and that sort of thing. And you're thinking, okay, well, these people want to come over here to make their lives better. And they generally do make the country better from what the statistics show. But instead, they come over here wanting a better life for themselves, wanting to work. The statistics show the majority of people who are unemployed and claiming benefits are, unsurprisingly, white English people. And even so, it's all these things where somehow what keeps on happening is that, well, I know why the reason is because white people seem to, you know, are in power, make a lot of the laws, and the majority of politicians are. So it's very easy to scapegoat and to say, look, that person looks different to you, therefore they are the problem. Yeah. It's not us, it's them. And then it snowballs from there, and it just becomes this gigantic issue of immigration and all these things, rather than, hey, shouldn't it be the corporations at the top who are getting out of tax loopholes? You know, the statistics show that benefit fraud and things is an incredibly small detriment to the British economy. What is a massive detriment to British economy is the amount of companies such as Amazon and Google and things who operate in here but do not pay any tax. And you guys have that issue
as well. We do have that issue.
Is there a connection?
You know, the connection is messaging. You look at people like David Cameron and Boris Johnson that are over there doing the messaging. Yeah, that's why they believe
propaganda at its finest. Yeah. Like, who is gaslighting all this?
Yeah, well.
Well, white people up in power is normally, the problem is that the majority of people in power in the Western world seem to be old white dudes who got into power in probably dodgy means. And then they're in power, and then they control all the money and all the laws.
Mike, you got to be very careful. Anything. I want to make, listen, I love your show, and I love how you are so honest, man. But you are going to be an old white dude one day. You don't want to burn any bridges before you get to the motherfucking
goddamn. I am going to be an old white dude. Yeah, that's fine. I'm okay with that. It's just the simple fact is, I don't think there's any black individuals who are in a position of power in England who have caused any issues. Yes. Well, in America, the only, you had your, you know, it's the word is the token, because, you know, what happens is they go, we're not racist. Why? We had that one guy. That means that, there we go. So racism solved. We had Barack Obama. And therefore, for the next 200 years, we're going to have loads of white and orange people. That wasn't racial slur. Want to clarify.
Man, let's not bring people down, man. Let's talk some fun stuff before we wrap, so we can wrap this thing up. I don't want your listeners to think that it's just you just brought these three black guys on here to lambaste white people. And shit. Like, God damn. That's not why we were brought on the show. That's not why we're here.
No.
Sounds like a white motherfucker at the beginning of the jump. Off the jump.
I'm consistent. I'm the fucking
one. Yeah, true.
All right. Let me ask you this, Mike, man. Why are you guys sending so many actors over here to the United States?
Why are you guys sending so many
British actors over here to the United States to take our spot? I'm just saying.
So many.
Idris Elba wasn't enough. Daniel Kaluuya. I'm like, okay, you guys got. It's enough. We're getting tired of all the British guys coming over.
Dude from that John Singleton joint.
Which one is that?
Snowfall.
Oh yeah.
What is his name?
He's Frank's.
He's British.
Yeah, he is.
He's British, bro. Yeah.
Man, shut up.
And Top Boy is raw. Oh my God.
Yeah, it is.
So
why are you guys sending all your folks over here, Mike?
What's going on?
They can't get no jobs over
there. Sorry.
I don't know how to answer that.
In all honesty, I can't think of a joke and I can't think of a person. So I don't know. I think, you know, in the really unfunny, bland answer, money.
Yeah.
You guys have a much more prevalent sort of media and movie industry. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, obviously it's one of those things as well. Probably the wokeness is a part of it, being, you know, that level of it, of like, you know, Idris Elba, you know, he's a very well-spoken black individual. You know, we need to use him as the poster child to prove we're not racist.
We love Idris.
Which is not, I do like.
Have you guys ever heard Idris Elba's story about how he got the spot on The Wire?
No, I never cared.
No,
No, so he went to go. Do the acting or receive the acting call to play. It wasn't even Stringer Bell that he was playing for.
Yeah, it was somebody else entirely.
It was somebody. It was one of the other guys that he wanted to get a spot for. And his coach. Yeah, I think his acting coach and someone else told him, "Hey, listen, I know that you're really, really good." But the writer, the creator behind The Wire, he's like, he does not like British people, man. He does not like them. He hates them, matter of fact. So whatever you do, speak with your English accent and do not tell him you're from the UK. So he goes and does his audition and he knocks it out the park. And then they're like, okay, well, we want you to come back and do another reading. And he came back and he did another reading. So the guy asked him, where are you from? He said, I'm from Middle America. And he looked at the dude like, what? Where in Middle America are you from? I'm from Detroit. Where in Detroit are you from? And finally he's like, man, you got me, man. I'm from the fucking UK. I don't know what else to tell you. And he said, luckily enough, he had done such a good job by that point in terms of, you know, the role and doing it during the audition. They were like, okay, we'll let you slide and we'll choose an English person for this role. I didn't even know Idris Elba was British until after the damn wire was over.
Yeah, well, in order to see, I've only seen, annoyingly, I started watching a while with a friend of mine, and then she didn't want to watch it anymore. And I've got all the DVDs, and I have not yet watched it all. So I'm a terrible person. I'm sorry, guys.
Take your time.
I know, just went down the estimations.
Especially season 3.
Yeah, Mike, you need a good black friend that's going to watch that with you to explain certain things. You know what?
Like, always signing up for
so
that.
So we're going to have to establish a watch party, Mike, so I can be that black friend to guide you through episodes of The Wire.
Please.
Oh, man.
Am I allowed to take photos of us together just to prove
you know what? Me, I have no problem with that. But Elgin, he doesn't like that shit. So
they're looking for me, man.
He's gonna come looking for you. He doesn't like that shit too much.
They're looking for me, man. So I'm trying to. Stay
low key. Got warrants. I would not mind.
Warrants.
I would not mind. You have my clearance.
Go ahead. Please feel free to take as many photos as you would like, please.
Just a quick thing is, have you guys, I don't know how much you guys all listen to podcasts in general, but have you listened to the Daryl Davis podcast with Joe Rogan?
I have not. To be very honest with you, Joe Rogan is an acquired taste. He has a very good show.
On and off.
Don't get it twisted.
On and off.
But he has a very good show, but I have not listened to that episode yet.
I would recommend specifically listen to that one. Do you know who Daryl Davis is? I didn't know who he was until.
You're talking about Daryl Davis, the he used to be a jazz player or some sort of blues player, and he went through America befriending Ku Klux Klan members along the way.
That guy. Yeah. Yeah, that dude,
he's
right there.
He's a bold and incredible black guy, I tell you.
Is that what he is?
Yeah.
Okay.
I say it's, what do you call it if it's not bold?
Listen, man, I want to hear what Mike has to say.
One of the points, I'd really recommend it to the podcast because it's obviously Rogan's one's always like 3 hours long. And in all honesty, if you don't like Rogan, he barely talks in it. So
okay.
Fine.
Wow, okay.
So with it, he talks about his experiences and how he went across America, as you say, and basically was essentially converting people from the Ku Klux Klan. And one of the things that he said was the most interesting, which kind of links into something we were talking about slightly earlier, which was what he found was when you approach these individuals who are racist, and it happens over here with people who are against immigrants and etc., is that almost every single time anyone is actually racist, it's because they've never actually interacted with anyone who they hate. They've never had a normal interaction.
Sure.
And then they get involved in these groups and that their parents are in it or whoever. And then you walk down the street shouting racial slurs. Obviously, people who you are offending will react negatively towards you. And then it reinforces that whole, oh yeah, well, they're definitely terrible. Because you know what I mean? And so what Daryl Davis was saying is that he, whenever they said these things, because they talk about, he asked that one of the leaders of the KKK, like, why do you believe you're better than us? And then he used all these stupid explanations to make sense. I think he quoted, the lamb must not lay with the wolf in the Bible. And apparently that's to do with black and whites, which obviously is ridiculous. But that's the kind of dissonance they do where they force anything to fit their own narrative. And what you're saying is he just hung out with these people and just acted normally. If they brought up like racist shit, he would, you know, argue with them, but not in a horrible way. He would just say his point of view. And he said just slowly over time, pretty much all of them that he interacted with would just leave. So I think that the issue is here, and it's current in so many places, is that what people love to do is they hate things that they don't know about. And then that hate pushes the thing they don't know about even further away. And it becomes this cycle of just never wanting to learn. And I think it comes from that deep core thing which happens with a lot of individuals. Right. And I find that, in my opinion, it happens with men more, is the inability to admit when one is wrong. And the problem is that once someone's made their mind up and they've had this one thought, which has had no basis, they are so attached to their own ego and the lack of being able to say, look, I am sorry, I was ill-informed, I'm willing to go ahead. They will just double down and they will just put their hands in and say, no, I'm sticking to this, even though none of it makes any sense. And I think that is one of the things that causes some of the most major problems in the world in general, but also more specifically with what we've been talking about immigration, and that is basically hand in hand with racism. Mm-hmm. It's, I don't know those people, I don't want to know them, and I've made this random, pointless, stupid sort of thought about them, and regardless of any evidence I'm shown, I'm never going to change it. And it just goes from there.
Yeah, I think you're right. And the unfortunate part is that that type of mentality leads to indoctrination, because you pass that type of mentality down to other folks, and it becomes a cycle. And it, you got to be in a special place to be able to break that cycle. I'll be very honest with you. Yeah.
True.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a terrible thing. But do you guys have interest? I know we're going to be wrapping up in a moment, but do you guys, are you optimistic for the future? No. And I don't mean the next two couple of years. I mean long term. Thank you, Al. Appreciate that. I like the honesty. But just in general, like, it's, I wanted all three of you on for a good balanced perspective. So it's good. But, like, you know, there is that level of woke culture and the sort of over political correctness, in a sense of not actually doing it for the right reasons and just doing it to show off to people that you're, you know, woke. But do you guys think that eventually, I mean, I'll quickly say my thought is that I think eventually it'll get to a point where they won't have a choice, because there's that idea that because of the race essentially mixing, in theory, eventually everyone's just going to basically be like a middle ground color. Is that what we're going to have to wait for before everyone can stop fighting over stupid shit and we can fight over other stupid shit, like, you know, money, oil, and that sort of stuff?
I'm going to tell you, I'm not optimistic. I don't think I'm ever going to see it in my lifetime. And I have a really deep doubt that my children will see it in their lifetime, because I don't think it's something that white people want to take place. I think if it did happen, it would only be a sort of dying out process that you mentioned. I think because what we see, Mike, unfortunately, is we have this idea that racism is purely about a hatred of skin color. And that's a small component of it. Racism is so much more than the hatred of skin color. It's a combination of skin color, superiority, and power. Those would be the recipe for what a racist is, because in there is that power dynamic, the privilege that comes with whiteness. I think that's the part that white people have a most difficult time giving up, and that's probably their deepest fear, is getting rid and losing that whiteness, that power, that privilege. I have a strong doubt of that, man. I don't see, I never see a time in history where people who are in power willingly give up their power to the people that they made power off of in order to create equality. I can't think of a time in history that that's taken place, and I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, no doubt. Phil, why don't you go ahead next, man?
Well, I mean, I'll have to say that, you know, I can't be optimistic for the immediate future, but I'd like to think that, you know, my niece and nephew's generation, you know, along with, you know, the advances in technology, the certain level of rebellion you can have with that, you know, what a gifted child, a gifted black child can do without school can be just as powerful as what they can do in school. I'd like to think that we will find true financial empowerment through, unfortunately, probably the same capitalistic methods we've been growing up off of. And we'll probably master them in terrible ways, but we'll do it for the benefit of the people. It's going to hurt, but and my old ass probably won't like it, but that's what I think could happen.
Yeah. For me, I'm pretty much indifferent to it. I used to be optimistic in that sense and think that, you know, it's right around the corner, that this whole racism thing is going to break apart like a delicate China, but delicate China doll. And then we'll have this, you know, kumbaya moment amongst ourselves. But the older I get in age, the more I see that we are, I don't want to sound pessimistic, but the further we are from getting to that point. Like I said, I'm indifferent at this stage in my life. Ellen and I were in the service. I think we've always been taught, especially as servicemen, that you wish for the best, but you prepare for the worst.
Prepare for the worst.
And that's what I do with myself, with my family, with my children, is not that I don't want to lead them in a sense that they automatically become or see themselves as victims of this whole scenario, but they are prepared and have the tools necessary to be able to combat it and to overcome it, because there's no choice. It's going to be there regardless if they want it or not. And just to make sure that they're coming out better for it at the end run.
It's a rough battle.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
And it's the time that you said that, you know, sort of hoping for the best, but preparing for the worst. I mean, I think I've said not to do with this subject matter, but I've said that general thing, I think on this podcast, about life in general. It's one of the best ways to be is trying to be optimistic and hoping the optimism will pay off, but knowing that humans are really, really shit to each other a lot of the time and having to deal with that. May I ask one final question before we sort of end up? This is one which, in all honesty, I've never asked a black individual this question, and I've heard it discussed a bit before, and sorry if it's too much of a big question. But
be careful. Elgin has just gotten his passport, so he might come and pay you a visit. He's willing to come and pay you a visit, so be careful with the question.
I'll put an embargo on his ass.
Go ahead, Mike.
It's essentially the idea, essentially reparations. Do you guys think that, maybe too much of a big question, I will say, I didn't write it down or anything like that. I only just thought of it, but do you think, because I don't really, I don't have an opinion on it in the sense of I've thought about it, but I have no, to be brutally honest and literally, I have no skin in the game of this. True. So do you think that it would actually be of benefit in some way, or do you think it is more seen as if they actually did do it, which it doesn't seem like they're going to, but if they did do that, it would be more of a publicity stunt than actually anything helpful, and it would actually cause more detriment because it would support some of the bad things that sort of races are thinking. You know what I mean?
So, I see what you're saying.
What are your opinions on that?
I see what you're saying. Go ahead, Al, because I know you got a lot to say about reparations.
Oh, God.
Make it quick, though. You know, Mike's got to go to bed.
Honestly, I don't think it's going to happen. Do black people, descendants of slaves in America, have a need for it? Are they due or owed reparations? Absolutely. But what is going to take place, I believe, is there won't be a cutting of the check. They're not going to hand black people, descendants of slaves, a check of some sort of dollar amount. They're going to try to pacify us in a number of variety of ways, whether it be education, you know, free schooling, or some of these other methods that they're going to use. Again, I can't see a white dominant government giving people who they have built their power base off power to create equality. I have a hard time seeing that. I don't think it's going to take place, unfortunately. I would love for them to do that, though.
Go ahead, Phil.
Yeah. I mean, I'm in the same boat. I can't see the idea of reparations becoming a reality in my lifetime, or, you know, in my niece and nephew's lifetime. Reparations, even though reparations has occurred in different forms for other groups too. But for this particular group, the form that reparations we even have to take would be revolutionary. Yeah. Whatever form that would have to be agreed upon to pay back, you know, the centuries of blood and pain. I mean, you can't put, I don't think you put a monetary figure on it. I mean, free schooling is one thing, you know, but they kind of already doing that.
Yeah, right.
And they're going to point to that, like, what about public school? But public school sucks.
Oh, man, for me, to be honest with you, man, I don't see it happening in my lifetime. I don't see it happening in my children's lifetime. I don't see it happening in their children's lifetime, to be very frank with you. But at the same time, is it owed? Hell yeah. It's owed because just on the simple fact that you took people that did work, forced them to do it for free, and you made profit. Just on the basis of fairness, it needs to happen. Then when you look at the fact that the United States gave reparations to Japanese internments, gave reparations to Jewish people that were not even victims of atrocities on this soil, gave it to Native Americans, talk less of people that you enslaved and have kept under some form of oppression for 400 years, I think that is, cutting them a check is the least you could do. Talk less of, oh, we are, by the way, we might as well treat you nicely and not beat you up in the streets and all that other stuff. So
that's fair enough. Yeah. I mean, it was one of those questions that, I don't think it's, unfortunately, I do not believe it's going to happen either. And I would want to know if, I obviously believe it is clearly owed, but I didn't know if my mindset, I was thinking that with a certain racist, what they would potentially do is use that even further against yourselves. Because if you did say, I'm not saying this is a reason to not do it in any way, but if as an example, really simple example, every black individual got a certain amount of money and then free schooling, free education, etc. And then what a lot of the racists would potentially do is they would go, the only reason that you blacks are in these powers is because we gave it to you. That's one of those things where could it be more damaging in the long run?
That's the unfortunate part about that is that not only is that an argument from white racists, but that's also an argument from other black people do the same thing. They will tell you that you're playing the victim, that you don't need that money, that you need to just pull yourself up by your bootstraps.
And be an American,
in spite of knowing the historical facts of how black people were treated. As Phil has eloquently said already at the beginning, we're not looking for handouts. We're looking for what to do. And I think anybody that's a genuine human being that works hard for a living wants themselves and their family to advance, just wants what's due to them.
That's it.
100%. Yep. And it's unfortunate that, I mean, having this conversation with you guys has been absolutely fantastic, and I really appreciate you taking the time out, but it's actually quite upsetting that we have to even have half of the conversations we've had, because the world is in such shambles in so many ways. And even from my view, not enough people talking about it. It took me looking and searching and getting into podcasting to then find your guys' show to then even have the idea of these questions. Yeah. And the problem is that I shouldn't have to go to that length to even know what the question I should be asking is, let alone trying to figure the answer out. And I think that's one of the biggest issues. So I think that what you guys have been doing with your podcast and coming on this podcast is helping spread the word of just people asking the right questions. Yeah. And once the questions can get asked to all the people, then we can start figuring out the answers.
Sure, let's talk about it.
That's it. Exactly. And I, 100%.
Mike, man, we are so thankful to be on the show, man. I know that you're going to do a great job of pushing this to all of your black friends. But you are now an honorary white friend of the In the Black podcast. We want to thank you too, man. Thank you for that.
Great time.
Thank you so much for that. Well, you guys are always welcome on the show, and you know, maybe we'll keep doing this again, maybe later in this year or something. If there's any issues you want to kind of flag up,
sounds great to me.
That'd be awesome. You're always welcome, great to guys.
Me. Let me just do a shameless plug. Once again, we are the In the Black podcast. We are everywhere, every major social media, every major streaming platform that you can think of. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram at In the Black PDCST. Come to our website, check out past episodes, check out all the good stuff, www.intheblackpodcast.com. And yeah, thank you. We're the In the Black podcast. I'm Big O, and I'll let these other clowns
in. I'm L.
Orange Crush.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And of course, we have White Mike. Is that
White Mike?
Is that good? White Mike, that's it. That's the moniker, dog. White Mike.
No. White Mike. It's better than white motherfucker. I mean, White Mike, white motherfucker. Which one you want to be?
Oh, my God. No, it was great, man. It was great.
Amazing.
Great job, man.
And that's the end of the podcast. Thanks as always for tuning in, guys. As I said, you should check out the In the Black podcast. They're one of my favorite indie podcasts. So, you know, be sure to check them out. There's links in the description for those. Before I get into coming up, I want to talk about the new show that I've got. It's called Star Wars Comics in Canon. You can find it on the Comics in Motion feed. Essentially, Comics in Motion is a podcast I've done collaborations with before. They've been on my show, I've been on theirs. When I did that sort of Star Wars thing around Christmas as a run-up to The Rise of Skywalker, the guys from Comics in Motion, as well as Scott from 20th Century Geek, they were all involved. We did on each other's channels. So any regular listeners should be vaguely familiar with Comics in Motion as a podcast. So they basically asked me to do a show on there. I think they're eventually going to be doing one different show on their channel every day. At current, I think mine is the fourth on there. So they're released every Saturday. I've only released one episode so far, and it's called Episode Zero. Hello there. And it's basically me just underlying what you can expect from the show. I will be releasing that episode on this feed at some point, I think, in the next week. I may do it instead of releasing an episode on this coming Sunday, because it is about half an hour long. Plus, I'll have an intro and an outro to it potentially. potentially or something. But essentially, it's me talking about Star Wars comics. Episode Zero is me giving information on the difference between canon and legends, the timeline of the Skywalker saga, a little bit of detail about the High Republic because they're coming out, what sort of comics and things I'll be covering, which is relatively all of them. And I'll be talking about the books and stuff like that a little bit and tying it in with other works for Star Wars and adding in trivia and that sort of things. So, and each episode isn't going to be about one comic. Each episode's generally going to be about either an event or a character or a recommendation. So there'll probably be one about Kylo Ren, which will be about the Rise of Kylo Ren comics, but also other comics he's been involved in, as well as other stuff. There's going to be like, there's quite a few comics that came out before The Force Awakens, so I'll do one episode which is going to be about all the ones about The Force Awakens, essentially what are good to read to assist with the watching of that. So that's the kind of thing you can expect from that. As I said, it is on the Comics in Motion podcast feed. I've included a link to their Acast site in the description, but if you type in Comics in Motion anywhere that you listen to Genuine Chit Chat, it will come up. And as I said, it's called Star Wars Comics in Canon. Episode Zero is currently out, and I should be releasing the same episode on here anyway soon, but future episodes I likely won't be releasing on Genuine Chit Chat. It will just be on the Comics Emotions feed. Anyway, just a quick brief on what's coming up. I've got episodes recorded with Frank Burton, who is of the Ragbag podcast. He's been on the show twice before. He's got a new book out, so we speak about that. And I also have Goff of Beer Nuts Productions on. That's going to be two separate episodes, each of an hour long, which are both really, really good in different ways. So they're basically the next four that I've got recorded. Obviously, I mentioned I may be releasing the Star Wars Comics in Canon episode this coming sort of Sunday, next Sunday, instead of a full episode, which I may do. I haven't fully decided. Then also, I've got a recording with my mate Reese tomorrow. I don't know how long it's going to be or what really it's going to be about, except maybe a bit of meditation because he's got some interesting opinions on that. So he's been on the show a few times before. He was actually the person who did the first ever episode of Genuine Chit Chat with me, and he's been in a few more since then. So that's what you can kind of expect from the coming weeks. As I said, please go and check out that Star Wars podcast I've done over at Comics in Motion, and please check out Comics in Motion and the other shows on there as well. I think it's Mandatory, Marvel and DC, and Indie Comics Spotlight. Indie Comics Spotlight is actually done by Tony Farina, who's also been on the show before as well. So, you know, it's all very incestuous in that sort of sense. You know, we're all interconnected in the podcasting realms, so be sure to check out that. I really appreciate anyone checking out the show. Leaving reviews on iTunes and all that sort of stuff is really appreciated, and sharing on social media is really appreciated too, because I don't spend money on ads or anything like that. I rely on word of mouth and that sort of thing. So yeah, that's about it for me, guys. Thank you so much for listening as always, and I'll talk to you next week.